The DL debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen. And there's free admission entertainment every weekend.
It's Monday evening, it's 7 o'clock, it's time for the DL debate. Joining us this evening, we have a host of top names of GA, including the one and only John Jazz Harn in studio here. We're going to be talking all things GA with Colin Parkinson and with Kieran Whelan, and a man of a thousand voices, Aidan Tierney, is joining us as we beam out live here from the famous Mountaintop Studios here in Letterkenny at Highland Radio. And getting straight into it, John Harn, what can you say about yesterday? Impeccable conditions, or impeccable pitch. The conditions were atrocious. You'd have to say hats off to everybody involved in Letterkenny, being able to survive two games. What more can we do but make the pitch perfect? But again, that Letterkenny hoodoo come back to haunt us, and we couldn't get across the line against Galway.
Oh, I know, Brendan. Very disappointing after all the work that we've done. And, you know, big praise to Vincent and Andy out there in O'Donnell Park, put in Trojan work. And, you know, on Saturday we thought that we were grand, but geez, it made some rain overnight, and Sunday morning it was looking tricky. But thankfully Vincent was confident, and we got the go ahead. But the old hoodoo came back to haunt us again, Bren. You know, very disappointing from a St. Junior's point of view, because we get plenty of stick about it nowadays. But, you know, when Kieran Thompson put that ball in the back of the net, you know, I was standing just below the stand and said, thank God, 7 points up now, strong breeze, you know, this is only going one way. There's no way we can throw this away. So, you know, very, very disappointing, the fact that we managed to throw it away and not even get a draw at the end, you know.
Yeah, so you're often thinking of some games, if you could just freeze time at that point. We went 7 points up in a low-scoring game, and everybody thought then, yeah, annihilation. But, you know, goals win games, goals change matches. No more than that one, we put away, thought, listen, we're in a complete driving seat here, Galway in 4 points, 2-5. You'd have thought, no. But that response, that goal straight off the bat, was again the killer. And again, the second goal, John, their Achilles heel defending, you know, the goal against Mayo as well, it's hurting us so much. We could be sitting top of the table here now, looking down everybody, and that's still with some vital players missing. And I just think, round about the heart of our defence has been a bit of an issue, and that second goal came right through the heart of our defence again. You know, I don't think in any way you can blame Sean Patton for either goal. We've got to give him a chance to at least be putting pressure on the men, and that's a bit of a worry going forward. You know, again with Donegal, a bit like last year, a lot of good aspects to their game, but still our final approach to defending, I still think, is not up there with the top teams.
No, probably not, you know, probably not cynical enough or streetwise enough, Ben. There's probably a few new players in there, no more than Owen McFadden Ferry. I know it's his second year. Conor O'Donnell from my own club, St. Junior's, there, getting a run of games at centre-half back, and experience at that level, playing quite well. But, you know, streetwise at that top level, Ben, no more than the Mayo game that another St. Junior's man, Conor Morrison, couldn't get a handle on Paddy Durkin, or not Paddy Durkin, but James Durkin, that just got away from him, and everyone was, you know, take him down. But he just couldn't get there, you know, and he just put it in the back of the net. The same thing yesterday, I think, you know, for the second Galway goal, he kind of bounced off Conor, but you thought there was cover there, but he ran from the 45 the whole way through and stuck it in the net. Not a man came near him, you know, so, you know, there was no real cover there, Brendan. It is a bit of a Achilles heel. Suppose you're looking at, you know, Steve McMenamin is a big loss, Ben, probably doesn't get the recognition sometimes that he deserves. He's an experienced player for us at this stage now. He is probably our best man marker, you know, and, you know, he is a miss. Paddy McGrath, obviously, you know, a Trojan warrior at this stage, but, you know, Paddy's also a miss. That's the facts of it. They're experienced men and they're not there, and you miss them when they're not there. But it's given other boys a chance, Ben, whether, you know, they're going to be good enough for champions or step up. Listen, they're getting the run of games now. That's what the league's about. And Declan Bonner and his backroom team are going to see, you know, who's going to be fit for it come the summertime.
Listen, I think there's massive positives in there. I'm just a bit concerned about, obviously, the goals. Hugh McFadden's the other guy. They'll probably be sitting in around that number six. Bit of power, bit of strength, you know, trying to shore up that area. You know, I think still and all, you know, we had the chances to win it. I know Thompson's shot was very difficult. You know, Murphy, of all people, you know, Michael Murphy, you put your house on him. And I think with Thompson's one, you're looking at him to hit that far post and curl it in. Like, Thompson missed it that near side. Yeah. You'd want him to hit that far post. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Michael was looking to do, curl it in. It just didn't come in enough. And, you know, with all these players missing and with this new style that Bonner's putting in, you know, this more attack-minded style, we still could be sitting top of the league very easily. So, a lot of good things to work on going forward. And I think a lot of debate about this time added on as well. You know, Park Joy Sean complained about it. You know, something has to give. Personally, I don't really understand where, if there's 5 minutes in it and then there was a huge stop and added time, there has to be that time allotted to the game. And it's not that one team has been, you know, I see people coming out saying the refs are looking for the draw. The team that's defending the lead sits in and allows the other team to have the ball. So, of course, there's going to be a couple of chances come up then. It's not like anybody's trying to push it that way. You know, it seems to be, you're hearing a lot of people talking about it now, John. I mean, yeah. What's your thoughts on it?
No, Brendan, like, you go back to the match yesterday. The referee said 5 minutes injury time. There was a long stoppage in the injury time. Definitely, it was a minute and a half, 90 seconds, if not going on towards 2 minutes. So that time had to be added on. And if a team has in possession and they're attacking, which Donegal were over and back with, like, the referee's going to give them a chance. He's not just going to blow up the whistle of Ryan McHugh's the ball in the 45 going over and back. He has to let the play develop. It ends up a free. We miss the free. Going back to Saturday night, the Monaghan-Dublin game that was on TV, the same thing. There was time added on, but there was a lot of stoppages and injury time, and probably what teams are thinking. Now, there's a wee aspect of it too, Ben, that I'm not sure now the rules. We need to, you know, an injury is an injury, but if two players start grappling with each other and at the far end of the field, you know, in injury time, and, you know, one of the players has been cynical and the two of them go to the ground and the umpire says, you have to book these two boys, number 2 and number 15. The referee runs 90 yards, books them. Is that, you know, that's not an injury. So, but I think when referees are probably adding that time on, you know, that's a wee trick that, you know, some, you know, they're saying yesterday that Mickey Hart sent a boy on to get David Clifford sent off. So, listen, Ben, there's a lot of cynical play. Every team's trying to get an edge. They're all thinking now, what do you do in such a situation? The black cards come in, there's 10 minutes in the sin bin. How can we waste time if we are down to 14 men? How do we, you know, run down the clock? And they're all thinking of different things. So, what, you know, the backroom teams in these situations, you know, there was a big, sorry, Ben, just, you know, Galway were caught out last week down in Tralee when they got the man sent off at the end of the match, Kelly McDade, for 10 minutes and they couldn't get him back on, I think, for 12 minutes. And, you know, they were saying, should they have kicked the ball out of play to let him come back on? But they were holding on to possession. So, you know, you're in a catch-22 position. So a lot of stuff there that the teams have to get used to.
Yeah, and even someone as knowledgeable as you, John, is wondering about the rules here. And you're right, even before all these rules came in about sin bins now and advance marks and who's doing on time added on, what's allotted, people are very confused about it. And then you have people in the background of these county teams trying to figure up ways to maximise, which is their job. But of course, it probably goes against the spirit of the game. And you're talking about coming down to the game inches, John. If you look at it now, Tyrone and Galway, you know, Tyrone have an advantage in their point scoring of 2 points. Galway have one, and they're 2-3 in the league, you know. I know Donegal have a few extra because they played Meath and that.
Yeah.
You know, Monaghan have 3 extra. Like, there's nothing in it. You know, you don't have this big, which you would have had years ago. Everything is so tight and it's coming down. I think that's why we're seeing teams go in that defensive shape, and that's why things is coming now to every wee point of view has been analysed and pulled up. And I think at the minute it's getting less clear rather than more clear.
Exactly, exactly.
Right now in the DL debate, I'm delighted to be joined, taking time out from his hugely busy schedule, the one and only Colin Parkinson, the former Laois great, and of course host of the top podcast in Ireland, the GAR. We're coming for you, Colin. We're coming after you. Colin, delighted to have you on the show.
Thanks very much, Davey. I'll take the top podcast. Laois great now is a very debatable topic, but
it mightn't reach that far. No one might hear it, Colm. I'm in your corner anyway, my man. Well, listen, you're immersed in all things GA, you know, and before we get to a bit of action from the weekend and up to current stuff, I was just wondering, an overview of yourself being a Laois man in Leinster, the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer, as it seems. Is there ever going to be a day where you could see Laois matching up to the Dubs again?
Probably not in the near future anyways, not since the game's gone so professional, Davey. We just don't have the resources, we don't have the population. You know, without being defeatist about it, I don't think so. I think Meath and Kildare are probably best positioned to potentially challenge Dublin, whether they ever win or not, based on a numbers game and based on the money Dublin have and the sports science they have. It's not looking great, you know. It's definitely not like Leinster. One thing about the Ulster Championship is why you all love it and want to keep it is that there's like 3-4 teams that could win it. Like, Leinster's been one team for 15 years now, which is just, it's just boring. We're sick of it. It's just useless for us.
Mm. It is a big issue. Like, as much as we love the Ulster Championship here, really, and you don't want to see it going for the sake of the rest of the country. I think it has to, you know, because listen, the rest of the championships, you know, I know there's supposed to be very little teams in Connacht. There is a bit of a three-way there at times, but I mean, Kerry, of course, are completely lording it and will for the foreseeable future. So outside of a bit of action in Connacht and what we have in Ulster, the other two are like kind of relevant championships. And I'm just wondering, is there anything that, like you're talking about an underage structure or work being done at clubs and that, you know, is there anything there that you can say coming down the tracks? Because I haven't seen Meath this last while, and you know, Kildare, of course, won an under-20s championship the year before last and getting back up to top flight and then really bombing out of it. It just seems like, is there anyone in Leinster? You know, it's not that long ago Westmeath won a Leinster. You know, is there anybody there putting anything in place outside of the ordinary to really come with a strong structure, with a new team, a new wave?
Yeah, it's difficult. There's been a South Leinster project that Leinster Council have been launching, and it's to give some games development money to teams in South Leinster and try and improve them. It's all down to money, Brendan. Like, I mean, Dublin have 90 games development officers and the rest of Leinster have the equal amount. So Dublin have the games development officers of the rest of the province. They have the funding of the rest of the province, and they have one team and the rest of the province has 11 different teams. You know, so like, I mean, based on a numbers game, Leash don't have anywhere near the games development officers that they would need to get into the schools, get the numbers out in the clubs to try and get enough players playing Gaelic football to have a senior team to be able to challenge Dublin. And that's the reality of it. And every other county is in the same position. Like, every other county is struggling for that, for numbers, to get people involved in the clubs, to get people organised in the clubs well. You know, that's often the role with these games development officers in Dublin. They go, half their job is going into the schools to promote the game in areas where GAA isn't strong, and the other half of the week is spent organising the clubs. And that's the reality. Their clubs are well organised. They have good people involved with them, and they have somebody, not a volunteer, somebody whose job it is to do that. Yeah. So until the type of investment I think is put into the other counties, and not just to come up to Dublin's level, to catch up to Dublin, it needs to go even more than what Dublin are getting.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, it's definitely not easy. You don't want to be complaining about it all the time, because then you're accused of being defeatist. You know, so
it's like realistic though, Colm, you know, it's realistic where it's at, as you're saying, that what's happening now is, that's why I said the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer. It's not even that if someone put something in place now, you could catch up, because at the minute, it's just going so far ahead, and there's absolutely no sign of that getting any better. It's going to get like 10 times worse every year as it stands.
That's one part of it. Like, I mean, I remember in the 90s, people keep comparing back to the 90s. In the 90s, Dublin were completely disorganised. They had no under, they didn't even put in an under-20 team. At one point, like, it was an amateur game. Your senior team didn't need that much money. Now it's all about sports science. The backroom teams have gone 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Like, I mean, that kind of expertise, that kind of sports science. Like, I mean, if it's not important, why, you know, do teams have them? It's obviously important. That's one side of it. Then the other side of it is, it's the numbers game. They have a huge population, Dublin have. They're pumped full of games development money. They're, you know, all their advantages with population, they're making the most of that now. So it's on two different fronts where the money's helping them. It's helping them get the numbers into the clubs playing, and it's helping their senior team, you know, have the type of sports science, the type of recovery, the type of expertise that other counties just can't compete. Mm. Like, back in the amateur era, when you had a manager and two selectors and every team was the same, it's pretty much a level playing field back then.
Yeah.
Right now, it's not.
It even gets a bit political. I mean, when Donegal tabled the motion about the two games for Dublin at Croke Park, and the attitude back towards it, you know, as if we were somehow being unsporting, you know, it's unreal. There's almost like a big political weight behind it now. And funny, I see you challenging it sometimes. Of course, everybody attacks you then on Twitter. Sometimes I don't know how you have the stomach for that carry on Twitter, but
yeah.
Listen, that's fair play. You handle your own on it, but there's a wave of attack that comes, isn't there?
Yeah, Dublin fans I compare some of them a bit like soccer fans. Like, they're not like real GA people, because if you want to point out Leash's shortcomings and, you know, mistakes, I'm absolutely going to agree with you.
I agree,
you can look at it objectively and say, this is what we're not going to... There's a soccer element to their support where it's like you're either with them or you're against them, and there's no kind of middle ground, you know? I don't think that's the GA way. But anyway, That's the way they are. Like, I'll give you an example. Donegal were absolutely right about the motion. Leash brought a motion to bring Dublin out of Croke Park for their Leinster quarterfinal. And they brought it to a Leinster council meeting, and they were defeated 11-1. Leash were the only ones that voted. Every other county board delegate.
Because they were told. We're
routinely going up, getting hammered by Dublin and Croke Park, and Leash brought a motion to bring them out of Croke Park, give all the other Leinster counties potentially a home game. It didn't turn out to be a home game. It's a neutral game outside of Croke Park. And every other county voted against it.
Yes.
They preferred being lambs to slaughter in Croke Park because of money. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
Colin, John here. Not to overplay, you know, having a crack at Dublin here, but, you know, one of the things that stood out for me recently was, like, the Dublin Championship that was on TV, and, like, even the Dublin County Final. Like, the attendances were absolutely dismal. You know, there's something far wrong there, where they can have all these game development officers and the clubs are so strong and there are plenty of players. But when you dig down, you know, right into it, that, you know, even maybe people going to watch their own club in a county final or county semi-final, it's not even happening.
But, like, Portlaoise, my club is very poorly supported. I think big kind of clubs in urban areas find it hard to maybe replicate that community spirit that rural clubs can have. And I'd often look at rural clubs in Leash being a bit envious of how they're able to outshout our support in O'More Park when we have a huge, you know, massive population. I think in Dublin there's a lot of you know,
country people are blowing.
Country people whose commitment to the club might be to drop children to the Sunday morning training, but not necessarily have any connection to these clubs. So that might be a part of it as well, you know. So I know that made a bit of publicity, that I think it was the quarterfinal attendances. Like, quarterfinals, you know, they're not, I think they were on 2 days. I think it might be overblown. Generally, Dublin would have 10,000 at the county final, and Parnell Park will be full for them anyways.
Yeah, well, if you look, even just on the money side of it, like, I know, like, it goes to show you that Dublin are getting their money from everywhere else and all the sponsorship. There was something up, like, the money Dublin County Board took in from the county championships, maybe 120,000. I think the Galway County Board, I know Galway have the hurling and football from the clubs, but they took over 1.2 million and club games, you know, so massive.
Really?
Massive. Yeah, and their club championships. Massive money,
Huge story. All about the cash. Willie, do you know what? We've been talking different things here, Willie, about time added on, new rules, etc. I was just going to ask you a question, Willie. Being a former, compromised rules star, I think you played together. You were deployed to mark Big Barry Hall, I think it was, a man marking job.
No, the spider Everett. You were the star. You got the player of the tournament. I got 12 minutes. I got thrown around. I never got brought back on. No, it was the first year I was there.
It was Colm O'Rourke, and that was
in charge. Didn't get the trip.
Listen, it was good crack, all the same as usual, boy. But listen, tell me this. Say, I was just looking at the mark, this mark, an advanced mark, etc., Willie. And to me, it looks like any time it happens, it's an accident, you know. And these are scores that can define a game, and they're accidental. If you look at what I'm looking at, right, I don't see any team particularly that seem to be playing for it or training for it. Now, the odd time someone gives a certain pass, which ends up being a mark, a player gets a free shot at goal, and as me and John were saying, the scoring averages in the teams now, it's very little. What do you think about this, Mark? I don't think it's something that suits our game.
Well, to be honest with you, this is something I came up with 5 or 6 years ago, and the advanced mark I kind of thought about was a kick outside the 45 and caught inside the 21. So at least there's a good bit of air time on the ball. If you catch it inside there, it's going to be a pressurised catch. You probably deserve it. And it would kind of stop, maybe what I used to hate was a long ball would go into Aidan O'Shea and Philly McMahon, James McCarthy, and somebody else would surround him.
Yes.
And or Kieran Donoghue would be surrounded, and it would end up being a free out. That there'd be some reward for catching a long ball. Like, you might only use an advance mark like that maybe twice a half. So it was just like a little extra onto the game, add a bit of theatre, reward a forward for catching it in there and not being surrounded. The idea that they brought it down to the 45, for me, is just farcical. It's a bit more like Aussie rules. There's much kind of less clarity on whether the ball went 20 metres. I think a lot of them aren't going 20 metres, especially these little lateral ones. And there's fellas catching a ball, getting a free kick at the goal when all they did was catch a little ball into their belly. Like, there's no skill involved. So that's very disappointing. I'm hoping to change it back in. If they change it back in, the game's changed very, very little outside of a longer kick with clear markings on the field outside the 45, inside the 21. And when that's caught, generally, a bit like here in Kilkenny, caught a good one on Morley in the Kerry Dublin game. You tend, if you win one, that's when you're under pressure. And to be honest, when you win one and two lads surround you, is there any difference between a free kick at goal and the game being stopped for a free out, which it usually is anyway? So I don't think the game would be slowed down in any way. I hope they change it back, because I think the advance mark, I think it's a good idea if it's kept inside the 21. I think outside the 45, just that fundamentally changes game football to something else.
Yeah, because if you look at it, the way the mark is, obviously in Aussie rules, that is the main way you get scores, and that's how teams play the game. It's all about getting that ball in the air and feeling it, whereas no Gaelic team's going to play like that. They're going to build up play. As we're saying, it has to be at that situation. I just worry as well, if you're thinking about target men inside, not everybody has the likes of a Kieran Donaghy or an Aidan O'Shea or a Michael Murphy to throw up there. You know, most of your GAA players haven't got that ability to win a ball anyway, as much as it's suitable for some teams. And you think about all your classy wee corner forwards over the times, you know, your Bernard Franz, James McCartney, fellas like this. Their skill of play wouldn't be involved in that type of game at all. So I think, you know, the advance mark, I think there is, as you say, a point of view in that, William. We've got to get you up and maybe put the case to Congress before the year's out.
Well, my idea of the advance mark was the one that was trialled. I'm fairly sure in the Auburn Cup, they changed it at a very late stage in the league last year. And then in the league last year, very few counties ever used it because it wasn't coming into the championship. So it's only this year that the light has kind of been shone on, you know, the advance mark outside, as far as the 45, it just looks silly.
And of course, Colm, as we all chase the mighty Dubs, I was just wondering now with Desi Farland and a man that's worked with all the players that's there now underage, you know, could the Dubs be better this year? Do you see anybody stopping them?
I think Kerry can stop them. I think Galway can stop them. I think Donegal can stop them. I think they're the three teams that are chasing them. And I think because I'm very excited about Galway this year, I think that they're playing to their strengths finally, and the idea that you could have Shane Walsh and Damien Comer and Michael Daly and Ian Burke and these fellas and not leave them up in the forwards is just, you know, bizarre. I think Donegal have the forward line to hurt Dublin. If Donegal go and beat them, I think Donegal probably tactically are the most kind of flexible team out there, in that when you play Donegal, you're not sure if they're going to drop bodies back ahead of the ball. Are they going to press you high? Are they going against Kerry last year in Croke Park? I couldn't believe they left pretty much four forwards in the forwards all the time. So I think Donegal have that element of surprise all the time. I think that's probably Rochford's influence, in that Donegal simply have to go and try and beat Dublin. I think they've been too cagey against them in the past. If they went at Dublin like they did against Kerry in Croke Park, they have forwards that can hurt Dublin. They have the players that can hurt Dublin. We know Kerry have the players that hurt Dublin. So, I don't know, maybe the first half against Monaghan the other night would give everybody a bit of hope. But then again, Dublin had a few forwards that won't be playing in the Championship. They won't give turnovers as easily as they did against Monaghan. And we know, in fairness, even though Monaghan played well, those kind of tactics, Dublin laugh at that kind of stuff in the summer. They don't give away turnovers.
Exactly.
And, you know, so in a way, a lot of people were positive about Monaghan. I was actually disappointed that they came with pretty much tactics Tyrone might have used 2 years ago against Dublin, and while it worked, that wasn't Dublin's forward line, and Dublin just kind of, you know, they weren't at the races the other night, and Monaghan were kind of almost at championship pace. It looked like one team completely up for it, the other not. So I don't know, if you were to look at it positively, I think maybe a couple more performances like that from Dublin, and I don't know, you might get a few kind of groans in their dressing room thinking Desi's not as good as Jim Gavin. I don't know.
Good man, Colm. Listen, he's backed us and not Tyrone. Hey, that's all we need to hear. Hey, Colm, first class. Listen, you have a good day,
no,
lad. I'll chat you soon, my man.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen. And there's free admission entertainment every weekend.
Right, folks, right. Now we're delighted to be joined on the line by one of the best midfielders of a generation and top RTE pundit and voice of reason, might I say, Kieran Whelan. You're welcome to the DL Debate.
Hey, Brian, how's it going? How's
the very best, my man. You know, I was just looking at the coverage there last night. Pats Bland looked like someone gave him five tins of Red Bull. He looked like he was ready to explode there. And you were beside, okay, he just read off meat in Mayo season, basically, after a couple of games. You were like, hold on, just take it a wee bit easy there.
I think it was the bitter cold, you know, standing on the sideline 5 hours in Navan, I have to say, is not great. You know, we're so used to the old comfortable hot studio, but all the election lads were in there last night, so we were stitched up to Navan for the day.
He was really wired, all right.
Yeah.
Well, that would explain the coverage. I've seen the coverage been out and about a wee bit there. That would explain that, all right. Kieran, listen, hey, it was another fascinating weekend's football, like a lot of the points you were talking about. Obviously, the sunburns and black cards and advanced marks, etc. And, Kieran, I was just wondering your thoughts there, particularly, I suppose, from a Dublin perspective. We're heading to Croke Park now in a couple of weeks' time. You know, we've seen the good and the bad from Dublin. And I was just thinking, with a side that missing a lot of players, not playing at all in the first half, if anything, this must seriously strengthen the resolve that we just can't be beat.
Yeah, it does. Like, the strange thing about it, Brendan, is that you look at the league table and Dublin are top, you know, they're 4 points, which is a good position to be in, but still, I suppose a lot of people left on Saturday night thinking it was a really poor performance, and if you'd be very honest about it, Manor are probably kicking themselves. They should have went down the road with the 2 points. Dublin were very poor for 65 minutes. It's definitely the most flattest performance I've seen from them. Maybe they had a heavy week training, they looked lethargic in the first half. Don't look like they've really invested much time even into the mark. Like, attacking wise, they weren't very direct going forward. They were kind of slow and ponderous, and they let Monaghan kind of regroup and get men behind the ball and hit them on the counter attack. So it's not an overly concern. They still show great character and resilience to dig it out, and there still is that extra injection of a couple of gears when it's needed to up the game. And they kind of say they got a bit of a. They had a bit of a chat with themselves at half time, I'd say, and came out. So it was a flat enough performance, but maybe they'll bounce back in a couple of weeks' time when you guys come down the road, you know. You never know.
Yeah. It's just, do you know something that we're hoping that there? It looked here that there just was never an opportunity for that comeback right up. Even really in the 50 minutes, it was complete, you know, it was Monaghan's game to lose. And I suppose the goal came from that point of view, it got slightly fortuitous, you know, with that the hot ball in and that. But I was just wondering, you know, the Banty seems to have handed over tactics. You know, Conor Lavery's coming in there. Obviously, Peter Donnelly coming in, strength and conditioning. You know, at times, he did look right on the money. I think it could be a good season for Monaghan, but certainly with the Dubs in role, with Desi in there, Kieran, would you think there's a potential that the Dubs could be better this season?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like, I think you got to put it in context where Monaghan are in their season with Laverty and Donnelly going in and Banty and a bit of energy, a bit of freshness, a bit of a bounce in them, probably a fair bit of work done. And a lot of people probably expected them to level off a bit with the age of their team, you know, but they're bringing through new players where, you know, the only thing I'd say from Dublin's perspective is that Desi Farrell had 3 sessions possibly before the first league game, and he's at 3 games now in the bounce, so a lot of the stuff in between is kind of recovery. It's wintertime stuff. And it doesn't look like he's aligned the team tactically in any shape or form. It's kind of like he's maybe sussing out to see where their levels are at, where some of the older players are at, you know, where Kevin McManaman is at, where Paddy Andrews are at. And then he's trying to introduce a few younger lads. And we took a lot of the younger lads off the other night that he had introduced. But listen, you know yourself, your first out in Croke Park is intimidating, you know, on any team, you know what I mean?
Sure.
You can't write those guys off yet. So I think Dublin are probably just a bit behind where they should be. And Monaghan came down and you could see that they had roles for McInnesby to pick up, the likes of Kilkenny, you know, Fenton, you know, Cairns was very good in the middle of the park as well. And it was when the midfielders went off that Fenton came into the game in the last 10 minutes. So they got their matchups very right, they were well prepared. I'm probably just a few weeks ahead of where Dublin are at, but I do agree with you. Like, it's while it's early in the year, the signs from Monaghan are good. But listen, as you know, it's very passing judgment this time of year. It can be very naive thing to do. So right. It's really going to come. It's going to count come June and July to see where teams are at.
Can you just bring up on the point you made about Galway and. I would agree with you, you know, that you were saying the story of the season so far. You know, I like to see teams in the flesh before I really comment on them. And Galway and Letterkenny played exactly like Kevin Walsh's team would play. And I know we want to dream of them playing some mad Coir Ó Fin style of football. They played exactly like the old Galway. Now, I've seen bits and pieces on the TV. them saying that's how they played now, honestly. And I think, you know, probably Barry Joyce realises that, you know, probably horses for courses going up the game in Letterkenny. They sat so deep, they were literally putting 15 men behind the ball and counter-attacked on Donegal all day.
Well, it's interesting. I didn't see that game, obviously, because we're in Navan, but it's interesting that you should say that, you know, because obviously a lot of people are talking about Galway being released and playing with that attacking flair that we kind of saw them playing against, you know, Kerry and Monaghan the previous week. But listen, you know, any good manager worth his salt has to have a plan A and a plan B, yeah. And they have to adapt their teams and play depending on who they're up against, what the circumstances are and what the conditions are. And particularly yesterday with the wind blown, you know, I think a lot of teams were very kind of, you know, when you get a gale force breeze in, particularly in National League, you have to be smart about how you go against the game. You have to be brave enough to attack on the counter-attack, but at the same time, you don't want to leave yourself exposed at the back. So maybe, you know, they were closing down the space yesterday. It might have been based on conditions, and maybe that's a positive. Maybe that choice is kind of saying, yeah, well, listen, my team have that in their locker. If we have to set up defensively for 20, 25 minutes, they can, but let's release them when needed, or when you're up against a team that's going to play man-to-man football. So, like, again, they are the talk of the season so far, and Joyce has energised them, but it's very, very early in the year to be making judgment calls on it. And yeah, like, even you look at themselves and Monaghan, both new managers in place, with good backroom teams, and generally in the county football you get a bit of a bounce in those scenarios, so you have to be very, very careful to not do it too early.
Kieran, listen, first, yeah. Kieran, I know you're busy there, you're in the middle of work. There's a serious midfield legend beside me here, John Harn, and your own guys. He wants to ask you a quick question, just Kieran.
Yeah, no problem.
Kieran, the first question is a serious question. Kieran, regarding the Dublin team, you know, going on now for the rest of the season, is there a couple of places up for grabs, do you think, for them young players coming in? Like, I know young Bugler's doing very well in the forward line. Like, is there a couple of the older players under pressure, do you think?
Yeah, it would be interesting. I definitely think that Desi's given game time to the likes of Ken McManaman and Paddy Andrews, probably to see where they're at. You know, Michael Darmacaulay's out injured as well. You know, they probably need a bit of backup in midfield. It seems that Brian Howard has been aligned to midfield, and that's going to free up the space possibly in the forward line for the likes of Bunker to come in. He's also had a look at Dan O'Brien, who's, you know, I'd be familiar enough with Dan. I had him in underage teams. He's, again, a very good link player who can play either in the half-backs or he can play in the half-forwards. He's very, very versatile. But I do, like, the one thing that people would say, I suppose, around Dublin is that particularly in the defence, that, you know, the depth may not be there that people think, particularly on the defensive side of things. And Keane O'Sullivan obviously hasn't come back, and we don't know whether he will be back. Johnny Cooper's to come back into the fold. Philly McMahon's another on the wrong side of 30 and played the first game but hasn't been seen since. So there's probably, that's why maybe he's looking at a few of the younger lads. He probably knows that he needs to develop a few throughout the league. So absolutely, I do think there's places up for grabs. I think there will be two or three changes to the Dublin team. It's only natural there's a few lads coming to the end. It's very hard to keep the levels of performance up where they have been.
Good stuff, Kieran. Just a last question. What kind of sponsorship did you get for wearing the big Puma gloves for all them years?
Loads.
I'll say that.
They were trademarked
for years.
Yeah, the fact that you remember them 10 years later, you can imagine how much they paid me.
There's one. There's that Puma symbol's imprinted in John Goodey's head still, I think, from one of the games we played.
Good man. Once the ball stuck to them, I didn't give a shit.
Good man. Thanks a million, Kim.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen. And there's free admission entertainment every weekend.
Well, even though it's a GA show, it's impossible to get away from politics at the minute. It's everywhere you turn. And of course, Pierce Doherty with his landslide victory here in Donegal. He didn't just get a seat for the doll. He practically got himself a couch. I'm just wondering, Leo Varadkar there, I was wondering, could you come out with admiration for this top Donegal politician?
First of all, I suppose it's no secret. Today is a particularly dark day for me as party leader. But as you say, I want to acknowledge the huge vote that Pearce Doherty and his running mate, Patrick McLaughlin, got in Donegal. But a lot of people have said that this is possibly the end of Fine Gael. But I don't agree. For me, it's still just half time, and I think we saw Saturday night in Croke Park. If Dublin can come back from hiding in the first half, then I'm sure there's no reason why Austin Finnegan can't come back and possibly draw the election, even though that's not actually possible. I absolutely haven't got a clue, sorry. It's been a very long night.
This election's taking it out of everybody, that's all right, Leo. I was just wondering, after you know your performance on TV last night, Pats Balan, you look like you're in danger of exploding whenever you got that mic. Are you a ticking time bomb?
Well, look at Brendan, do you know something, it got me thinking. Look, I was probably a little bit overwatched over the whole election and the fact that the Sinn Féin are going to sway the balance of power down south. Yes. They're already in power up and they're not. But you know something? Look, at the one thing that worried me from Sunday's games yesterday, and this is it, to Donegal. Why? Because I'm on Highland Radio. But look, at do you know the one thing I'd say about Donegal? They've got a serious, serious coach there, Stephen Rochford. He brings passion, he brings tactics, he brings enthusiasm, he brings game management. But the one worry I'd have from a Donegal point of view, maybe he's also brought the Mayo curse with him.
There's definitely a curse in Letterkenny at the minute. Just looking back to Saturday night's game there, and I want to just quickly talk to Banty. You know, you talk about famous half-time speech. What exactly did you say to the Monaghan players at half-time?
Well, sure, look at, you know, Brendan, look at, I suppose, look at half-time, we were 6 or 7 or 8 pints up there, and look at, you know, we were looking for us good, you know, and I suppose this, and, you know, I've come in here now for my second term as, you know, as manager of these boys, and these boys are great bunch of lads, and, but listen, I suppose, listen, in terms of Croke Park Saturday night, look at, I'm taking total responsibility for the fact that we threw away a huge lead against Dublin, game we should have definitely won. And listen, a lot of people are saying, what did Jesse Farland say? I don't know, but I put it all down to me, because a lot of people are asking me, what did I say to the Monaghan boys? And I give them clear instructions. We told them exactly what they had to do, how to go about it, how there was no way on earth we were going to concede a lead like that. And I think the boys probably couldn't understand the word I was saying, because I was talking too fast. So I said that's probably why we didn't end up winning the game.
That explains a lot. And you know, this is a new GA show, and no GA show would be complete without a word from the master, the one and only, Míle Mura Hearty. And I was just wondering, you know, for a man that's had so much time in the GA, is there any advice to someone starting out in a new show?
No, the first thing I would say, if I was to give you advice, I would say, tog go bogey. That means take it easy. That means a rolling stone gathers no moss. I think it means something else. But the one thing I would say about this weekend, the worst thing I saw, wasn't the demise of Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil or some senior ministers losing their seat. I thought the worst thing of all was David Clifford getting a red card. Because as you know, Brendan, down here in Kerry, we'd never, ever, ever do any such a thing like that. We'd have no experience of engaging in any of the dark arts or something like that. We're a pure footballing team. No negativity whatsoever. We'd never go out to do something like that ourselves. And as they say, if you believe that, you'll believe anything.
And what a great way to end the show there with the great voice of Míle O'Murdy. Thank you so much, a man of 1,000 voices, Aidan Tierney there. Listen, folks, that's a wrap. I just want to thank all the guests, John Harn in the studio here for accompanying me this evening, Colin Parkinson, Kieran Whelan, and of course, as I say, Aidan Tierney there. Coming up in the next few weeks, we've got some great guests coming up, no other than the likes of Joe Brawley. Paul Flynn's coming on as well to talk about his career and his new role with the GPA. And next week, GA broadcaster Damien Lawler's coming on to talk all things football, along with the one and only big Neil Gallagher, who's going to be in studio talking about his career from his early days right through the Great All-Ireland victory. That's all coming up in the next few weeks in the DL debate. Check this. Up.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen, and there's free admission entertainment every weekend.